Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I think
Long
I
time.
no, you go ahead.
After you.
See, I think I did the streaming thing wrong.
Oh.
I did the thing. It's supposed to be doing the thing. It's not doing the thing.
Well, that's okay. I mean, do people listen when we do these unprompted in the middle of the night out of
Some
nowhere?
sometimes they do. I don't know.
After like 2 months? All right. So, well, not 2 months, but a long time. Actually, was it 2 months?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
We could look that up probably, but it's not really important.
It's not worth being ashamed, more ashamed. But anyway, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm feeling significantly better. I got myself a bunch of antibiotics
Nice.
and prednisone, and so I am currently fully functional. But like, you know how the people who get the alien face hugger thing on, and then they get it off, and they're like, "I feel great." I'm like, I don't know if I'm like in that level, but
You're waiting for the chest burster to come out.
yeah. Which happens real fast in this movie, but li listeners, we are going to talk about Alien Romulus, and we don't always preface this with "oh, spoiler" or whatever, but like, use your brain. Like, if you have any intention of seeing this movie, and I do feel like it's worthwhile, then you should probably watch it before we talk about the stuff.
Yeah. Although a case can be made that if you've seen other alien movies, you've seen this one. But this one's still worth watching.
Yeah, I would say that. If you were just like, "I'm going to start watching alien movies now," and you picked up Alien Romulus, I think it might be a little strange experience.
Mean,
But
you'd get most of it. The ride of the film would be entertaining to you. You just might be a little
yeah.
bit puzzled about why certain things are occurring or like where things came from.
Yeah, or copious references to other movies.
Well, you would miss those, but that would be okay.
Yeah, it might be all for the best. Yeah, I don't know. I had conflicted feelings about this when it was announced and we saw the trailer and stuff, and it was just like, don't worry, this time it's gonna be alien stuff. And
You
it's
know,
just
I'm
like,
not sure I
okay.
actually saw the trailer, to be honest with you. I knew very little about this movie going into it, although I swear I saw some sort of like I'm getting right into the spoilers, some sort of, I don't know, TikTok or Instagram post that was talking about how the whatever they call the hybrid thing at the end there was a dude in a suit. They just went and found a real tall dude to do that. It wasn't CGI or somebody with like stilts and stuff. They found a tall guy.
Yeah, there's a lot of marketing material about how all this stuff is very real, and
Right there on the Wikipedia page there too. There's big couple of sentences about how they really leaned on practical effects and sets and things.
and I would just like to say that it is very obvious, even from the trailer, that there are just a lot of stuff that's not puppets that's in this movie.
All of the face huggers, basically.
Basically, I mean, there's it's very funny if you like, they're like, "Oh, we have some on remote control cars," and they wiggle their fingers and stuff on, and there's rod puppets and stuff, and it's like, okay, so you mean the ones that were just sitting on top of the crate when they walked through that room, and
Oh,
they're
yeah,
just
that
like,
one scene.
yeah, and it was just like, okay, they didn't like do anything,
Either
but
that or
like,
the ones that are physically wrapped around an actor's neck,
oh, of
basically.
course. Yeah, those obviously, but there's a lot of stuff where they're like flying through the air, and let's say running very quickly down hallways. What that's just not those are not the puppets. And there's a lot of stuff where they're like, "Oh, and here's the behind the scenes of the puppets of the alien things," and it's like, yeah, but some of the time when you see them from far away and they're like crawling over things, or let's say floating through zero gravity, that perhaps they are not puppets in those. But they even had a thing of like, "Oh, the ships, we got a guy to model the ships," and then it's like, but then maybe we had somebody like scan and build them digitally so that we could actually like do the things that we wanted to do with them, which is another one of those things.
It's nice that I missed all of this. I honestly missed basically all of this. I don't even know if I saw the trailer. If I saw a trailer for it, I immediately put it out of my mind because I don't remember anything about it, which was, you know, almost as good as a an unintentional media blackout.
Yeah, the trailer makes it look like a rehash, like a very, very, I would say stronger rehash than it actually turned out being. So I was pleasantly surprised when I watched this.
It's a pretty strong rehash.
Yeah, but the trailer is basically just like, hey, remember Alien and Aliens? We just made that as a movie again for you. Mm. But there's a little more nuance to the film because they like wrote characters and stuff.
They really connected the dots here with the original Alien. This movie, it even says there in the Wikipedia page, this is between Alien and Alien, so between the first and second movie. I'm not sure I know, or if it's really relevant, how this leads into the second movie. I mean, other than just chronologically, but I'm sure there's some breadcrumbs in there somewhere that I missed, maybe.
No, well, this movie doesn't connect to the second one. It just is placed chronologically in there, so that way the company is motivated to find anything. There is a weird line that Rook said, we'll talk about Rook later, but there's a weird line that Rook says where he says that there was only one survivor of the Nostromo, and it's just like, I don't know how he would know that necessarily, because they haven't recovered her yet. That happens in like 2 years after this film.
Yeah, that's a little bit odd. Mm-hmm. Let's just go through this, because this is all part of what we're actually seeing on screen here in the start. So yeah. the movie opens with some remains of the Nostromo floating around in space, and they go recover.
I would just like to point out, very conveniently, Nostromo, the nameplate panel, is floating whole in space after the entire thing was atomized.
Well, it had some extra structural integrity from the paint.
Yeah, yeah. All that lettering, it really held it together, the decals.
I don't remember the actual explosion.
Well, you know what I did today? I watched the first movie again.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and the explosion, I would say, is probably dramatic for the late 70s, but is very, you know, animated.
But like, it's ship self-destruct mode, right? Yeah. Like as an attempt to kill everything back when, you know, in the old days when ships had self-destructs on them for some reason.
Right. And she does the self-destruct, and then she changes her mind because she can't get out of the, anyway. So then she, you know, gets mad and then gets on the shuttle, and then she's like, oh, I finally made it out of there. And then she finds out there's the alien on top of inside of the shuttle. This will come up later in this film. And so they have that whole pastiche in there.
Yeah.
And they even stole a line of ashes from this to use where Ian Holm, the original actor, says, I can't lie about your chances, but you do have my sympathies. And he says it again in this one as the other character, Rook, who is, according to Fede Alvarez, he is not supposed to be an exact recreation of Ian Holm, but he's supposed to have Ian Holm's likeness.
Does. But like, I guess if you're just looking at this in terms of just like the world, it's like, this takes place, how long, does it say like 2 years or something? No, so 20 years after the first movie?
This is, I think, supposed to be 2 years from the time they find Ripley floating in deep space. And then they do the whole rigmarole and they go, you know, back to LV-426 or whatever it is.
Well, I thought it said something like it's 20 years after the Nostromo exploded.
Right. And she, because remember, she was lost in deep space for a long period of time, and like her daughter grew up and whatever. But when they send this drone, and it's all shot very, it is evocative of the opening of Alien.
Starfield. Yeah. The quietness. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the reflections of the screen on top of the, you know, not monitor, but the like camera that's, for some reason they have a AI controlled drone ship that has a camera watching a screen, but whatever.
Well, sorry, just to finish my last couple of questions here. So this is like 20 years after the first movie. So it's conceivable that whatever generation of Android or whatever that they're still kicking around is basically looks the same or whatever, because that's kind of the vibe. But every movie is like, oh, back in the day we used to make ones that looked like you, and then they were bad, and then we made better ones that look like me now and stuff. But so the so she escapes the Nostromo. Nostromo blows up. She kicks the alien out the spaceship or whatever. And the one that she fought off of the little escape shuttle is the one that they find floating in space somehow in a cocoon.
Yes.
So do we think it just like gurgled up a bunch of that like drooly spit or whatever and made like a cocoon out of it like that? Or is this, it's not like an ice cocoon from like spit, like this is new ground for the xenomorph as far as I'm aware, right? Like cocooning itself in like carbonite or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they do a lot of let's say construction, some unlicensed construction they didn't pull the permits for whenever they're inside of ships or on planets and stuff. And so it's whatever they excrete for that, would be my assumption. But
the material that they make their Geiger tubes out of.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, I don't know. But I assume it's some thing that came out of it in some way. Mm. I just have no idea how that, we don't need to know that. We don't need to know the biological processes.
He's like floating around in deep space and he's like, well, this kind of sucks. And I'm not going to die because I'm, you know, the perfect organism or whatever. So I might as well just like put myself in xenomorph cryosleep and just like make myself a cocoon. And then maybe somebody would be dumb enough to find me and cut me open later.
Right.
Or maybe the cocoon is going to protect him for like re-entry into a planet or something.
It seems dubious, but it would just, I guess, protect him until it ran into something else. Maybe. Yeah. I have no idea. It probably wasn't like a plan that the xenomorph had. It was probably more just like, oh, I'm in space. I should just chill out until something else happens.
You said this movie technically takes place after they've recovered Ripley or no?
But well, this is supposed to be before they recover Ripley because it's supposed to be before the events of Aliens. So
I guess I'm trying to remember. So they find her, wake her up, and they go straight to
LV-426
in Aliens. Okay, so like my question is, which we're going to come back to at probably a couple of instances here, is they knew the Nostromo exploded. Maybe they knew there was some sort of organism or alien that caused a lot of havoc. But my question is, how dumb were they about like what they did and didn't know about the thing? Because they're just like, cool, look what we found. Let's cut it open. They just assumed it was dead because it was floating around in space.
Yeah. Well, see, I think there was a line that they made some assumption that, you know, they thought it would probably be dead, but that because it's the, I think Rook says, because it's the perfect organism, it doesn't need air or food.
I mean, for having a lot of like laser tech where they can scan stuff and like they can x-ray through people and stuff, they're just like, do we want to scan the big cryo carbonite? No, let's just cut it open and see what's going on in there.
Yeah.
There's an extraordinary amount of
hubris.
Stupidity. It's just straight up stupidity. Like in some instances you'd be like, oh, they're naive, they don't quite know what they're dealing with yet. And for the instance of our main characters being like basically children, you can sort of understand that, but like most of the plot in this movie is driven by people just doing the dumbest possible thing that they could do at any given instance, which is like, all right, fine, whatever. It's kind of a horror movie trope, kind of an alien space movie trope too, but like at least the company should, like, presumably in a lot of these movies, like they have knowledge that they're like not really sharing with people, but they're not, they have the hubris to think that they can, this time it'll be different, we'll outsmart them or whatever, but they're still just doing extremely dumb stuff.
Yeah. Oh, and it's never completely clear how the company knows about certain things, because if you think about it, this movie does incorporate Prometheus and Alien Covenant sort of into its chronology, mainly Prometheus. But there's no linkage between David having created the things that are like xenomorphs basically in Alien Covenant, and him, you know, depositing those embryos into the cryo whatevers to take to their colony. There's no link between that and the events of any of the other films. So we don't know how the company knows about any of that. Also, the company only would know about the goo and crap from the Wayland expedition in Prometheus, assuming that stuff was ever transmitted anywhere. But they wouldn't necessarily know about the alien stuff unless somehow the alien stuff came up via David. Or another possibility is that the stuff that makes the aliens is always in the black goo, and so this has happened on some other occasion, because in the instructions that they receive in Alien, the first one, are to collect the organism at all costs and crew expendable. So they know there is an organism when they send them to go chasing after the signal that's detected. But they never really explain how the company knew there would be an organism in that movie. And they also,
I forget how it got aboard the ship in the first one, because they go land on whatever the planet and there's that slow motion thing where it like breaks a toe or whatever.
No, they land on the planet and it part of the ship breaks, and but whatever, they're going to continue, and it's John Hurt, I forget her name, Vanessa Cartwright, and Tom Skerritt, who go out on their little mission, and John Hurt's like, oh, I'll just go in this hole made of carved out of acid, and there's a bunch of there's a blue laser thing, a field I can put my hand through. Oh, there's a bunch of eggs here. Weird. This egg opened up. I'm going to just put my face over it.
He gets immediately face huggered or whatever, and then they take him aboard the ship, and that's how that whole thing goes out.
And so they're also doing the stupidest stuff in that movie. But the in defense of them in that movie, they haven't seen six alien movies. So they don't really like, or, you know, more if you count other things. But they haven't really, they don't have like, the movie never shows us stuff like in a dramatic kind of way, like, you know, Hitchcock showing the bomb under the theater seat or whatever.
I mean, walking into a field of like goopy, creepy looking eggs is one thing, but like, crawling your way into an abandoned, like busted up, like I know that they said like in this movie, what did they say? It was disused or
decommissioned. Was their guess.
Half of it's missing or whatever. It looks like it kind of exploded, but sure, it's decommissioned. But they like crawl aboard there, and very quickly you can see that something has gone wrong, because, you know, all of the dead things and like all of the things floating around in zero gravity that should not be floating around. And that what's the horror movie that I like in space?
It's also a Paul W.S. Anderson movie, speaking of.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Event Horizon.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. You board the abandoned looking ship, and then suddenly everything's floating around in zero G and it's creepy, and somebody turns on the gravity and it all lands.
This one at least doesn't have like a ball of spinning spikes with spotlights, or, you know.
Hey, the ball of spinning spikes and spotlights is pretty cool.
Yeah, okay. But
it doesn't have a big walkway with explosives.
This movie has red flags that come up often, and the people blow right past them. But I do like the opening setup we kind of breezed over, where we see the crap planet that these people live on, and the conditions that they live under, and that they're basically never going to get out of here. They're just slaves to the company.
Yeah.
I don't know how they clone canaries all the time, but they seem to do that on the planet instead of like having oxygen sensors. I don't know.
It's a mining planet. Do we know what they're mining?
It's never disclosed, but like, just like in the first Alien, they don't say what the mineral processing or whatever for the bulk of that thing is a refinery.
They're just there to suffer and die and extract things for the company.
Yeah. For corporate greed. And so I think I like the stuff on the planet, even though there's no aliens, or, you know, any kind of threat, because
I mean, it's probably hard to do anything different these days, but the planet is a little Blade Runner.
Well, a Blade Runner, but also they have they keep having those thunder lightning flashes that show us the atmosphere generator that they have that just happens to look exactly like the atmosphere generator in Aliens. But that is, you know, it makes sense because it's a company. They're just going to like build one kind of atmosphere generator. They don't just like have like a bespoke custom atmosphere generators for every planet. But they I think they just do a good job of making it seem like these people are desperate. Their little meeting where they're like, let's go do this thing. I think that sets it up nicely that they are what's her face? Our main actress, who I can't remember the name of, Rain, is basically talked into doing this thing that seems really dangerous. She's not an action hero. And Andy, her brother, quote unquote, who is synthetic, Andy the android, but he is malfunctioning. And he was apparently something that her father had, her late father had put together for her and programmed to do what's best for Rain. And so he will do whatever she says, and they're kind of counting on that. All of the other ne'er-do-wells are kind of counting on that. Her ex-boyfriend, the ex-boyfriend's sister, the ex-boyfriend's and sister's cousin, who according to Wikipedia is also the father of the sister's baby, which I don't know about that one. But then there's, what's her face? What's her face hugger? Navarro, who is kind of just like rough and weird. I didn't really understand, like, she has no character, which I guess is kind of like a sign of her imminent death, but they all have their little role to play in talking each other into this, and they go up on the cargo thing and they're just like, oopsie, it's a space station.
It's a ragtag group of kids / hackers who somehow detect that the space station is up there. And they also happen to live in No, I guess they don't live in it. They just have this ship, which is basically capable of escaping. But the reason that they don't escape is just because everything else is so far away that you would die before you got there if you didn't have cryosleep. Like, that's the gist of it, right? Like, right. It doesn't matter how slow ships are in the alien world here. If you can do cryosleep stuff, you can get wherever you need to go. That's ostensibly what we're talking about. That's how they get around stuff like having to have, you know, warp speed ships or whatever in this universe, right?
Right, because they can't have enough food and everything, and by the time you got there, you'd be old. So they have cryosleep is something they've relied on in the series for a long time.
Yeah,
it's kind of wild though. It's just an assumed thing that, like, it doesn't really matter how old you are, or when you were born, or what year it is. Basically, you just, like, if you need to go somewhere, just go to sleep for a decade.
Yeah, but it's convenient if you're trying to leave behind everything that sucks on your planet. It's not like they're missing anything. But
it's just weird that you just, like, fast forward a decade and be like, "Cool, I'm gonna go over there now." That's just a weird thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's one of the things that they complain about in some of the other movies. Is, you know, how old people are that they leave behind, but they have to do this so they can have the money to whatever anyway, so to financially, so, like, this is their job, like, this is their only, like, means of income. In the first movie, they're always arguing about their shares from the company, but they you know, go up to this space station, and the whole plan is like, oh well, it'll be easy because Andy can just unlock everything because he's a Weyland-Yutani synthetic, and so there won't be any issues. And then there's very quickly tons of issues, because they go through that little cross space thing and they turn the gravity generator back on.
Very suspicious though that, like, there's a literal, like, space dock that, like, is a foot and a half tall. I'm not sure I understand what that was built for, but whatever.
The other thing I didn't understand either is, it's a big Weyland-Yutani space station and there's a Weyland-Yutani planet down there, and nobody else was like, oopsie, we better go check this out from the company. But I guess they just didn't.
That's part of the timeline stuff that's a little weird, right? Because, like, stuff is in the past, but it's not super distant past. Like, especially when they got up there and Rook's like, five months ago, we tried to extract this alien and it killed everyone. It's like, 5 months ago? That's it?
Yeah.
That's kind of very near term here, guys.
Yeah, and that's plenty of time to, like, I don't know, send a distress signal down to the planet, but whatever. So they have everything all broken on this space station. And so they get the cryo things and they're just like, oh, but they don't have enough time. What was it, like 3 years or something? And they need 9 or something like that to get to the thing. So they're just like, we'll look around and see if we can pull some more, like, tubes of cryo crap. And
yeah, so, he's got a scanner that sees through walls that can find cryo energy or whatever.
Yeah, so they go to this lab that is all cryo, whatever, and they open it up, and there's water on the floor, which is not weird, and they start kicking around in that. And
this is where the stupid starts, because it's, like, it's very clearly a cryo lab where the cryo stuff is in use. Like, it's not just like stacked up in the corner or whatever. And they don't even like glance around the room to go like, I wonder what this stuff is actually doing. I mean, maybe I guess it's whoopsie daisy on them for not knowing that the ship has only been up there for 5 months. But like, I don't know, like there should be a different vibe for a ship that like got blowed up by aliens 5 months ago and something that's been up there for decades that is now like disused. This place seems like very recently used.
Yeah, they don't know that it's been 5 months or really the story about what's happened. But they,
but it doesn't read as like decades old while they're up there.
No, and it also doesn't read like the kind of thing where you just go start pulling things out of the wall.
Yeah,
you just want
to
like,
again, they're dumb kids, but they don't look around to see like what's maybe being kept frozen, and when I start yanking this stuff out, what's going to wake up and lock us in this room?
Yeah, and like, you know, just do your due diligence. Just be like, what happened that went so badly? Before we take this stuff from here with us, it just seems like a good idea to find that out. But they do it backwards because they pull the stuff, the lab locks down as a safety measure, and they can't get in with Andy's, they can't get out with Andy's credentials because he's just like a lowly, you know, whatever, just like a generic android. And so they have to, Kaylee gets the idea, or sorry, not Kaylee, Rain gets the idea, the actress's name is Kaylee. Rain gets the idea to pull the credentials out of the broken android that they found on the floor. And she does that. And there's a horror movie moment of it, like lurching back to life, which is fun. And she gets the credential thing out and she gives it to them. And they put it into Andy to get his credentials upgraded so that way he can open the door. But he's rebooting. And the whole entire time that's happening, facehuggers are popping out of the thing like popcorn.
I will have to say it was super duper cool when he like locked up and rebooted when he did the eyes that rolled back and had the serial numbers on the eyes. I really liked that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it added some tension because this movie is like ticking clock on top of ticking clock on top of ticking clock. And all of the LA movies are full of ticking clocks. This one just has a ton. And one of them is, how long does it take Andy to reboot before facehuggers face hug everybody?
Yeah, and they also set up, like, I don't know if they set it up efficiently, but like everything that they set up is paid off later. Like the whole, this disused spaceship is apparently 36 hours away from crashing into the rings that are around the planet, which is convenient timing for them, right. I guess. They got there, you know, a little bit early, day and a half early. But like that's one of the ticking clocks that they then accelerate dramatically, which whatever. I don't know if it needed to do that, but that's fine.
Yeah, mistakes were made. So
repeatedly.
Speaking of mistakes, yeah, he reboots, he opens the door, they get out, they close the door, facehugger gets through, facehugger gets on Navarro.
They close the door, they all just immediately break through the glass and chase them.
Yeah, and but they're just like, well, and Andy starts talking with a British accent, and his system's been upgraded, but he doesn't know how to explain what's happening to her, just that the thing is constricting around her neck anytime they try to touch it. And so they're just like, well, let's turn on the broken synthetic that we found that's like half disemboweled, and so they hook that back up, and that brings Rook online, and Rook is disturbingly the ghost of Ian Holm. Boo. And I looked this up after.
I forgot he was dead, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I mean, he certainly wasn't playing this role, that's for sure, but looking like he did in the 1970s. So I looked it up afterwards, and apparently Fede Alvarez was just like, I'm going to get clearance from the family. And so he got clearance from the widow and the family. And the widow apparently was like, oh, well, he felt like Hollywood wasn't really using him. And he would have loved to have participated in something like this. I have no idea how big the check was that they wrote for that. But it didn't seem essential to drag a dead actor into this for no reason. I don't feel like it really bridged this with the first movie in a way that you couldn't do with just another actor, but they really wanted it for some reason.
I think it's just that same sort of like generational android thing, like how we had a couple of Michael Fassbenders in the way back days, that this is the Ian Holm generation of
movies. I understand like in universe why they would look the same. I'm just saying, I don't know why, as a movie maker, you're like, dead actor time. I feel like that's just weird in general, and that your story really has to call for it, and that you can't recast the role. And the way they did it, they executed it, is he's all herky-jerky and weird, and it's supposed to just be the rough likeness, according to Fede Alvarez, and he talks funny to kind of cover up the fact that it's imperfect. But I didn't care for it.
Be honest, from your post-production perspective, do you think he downplayed that because they weren't able to make it as lifelike as they would have hoped, or do you think they were actually trying to be slightly different than the real Ian Holm?
I mean, I think they wanted it to look like he was malfunctioning. So I do think that was part of it, but to what degree they're like, oh, this isn't exactly what I want, I couldn't say. But the it seemed very augmented too in the performance in weird ways. So I don't know. I just found it very distracting. They did nail the vibe of Ash, the character from Alien, where he is doing what is best for the company and doesn't really care about the people insofar as they are components in the plan to do the thing the company needs. So he's not strictly speaking evil. He just is programmed to ignore anything that they need to survive. But he boots up and he tells them that it's an alien and that this thing is not going to come off and that she's dead, basically, into, you know, get rid of her before bad stuff happens. Then the face hugger comes off really fast compared to how long it took in the first movie. Have
any of the other movies tried using cryogas to freeze a face hugger off?
No. In the first one, they just tried to cut it and they like ate through three decks with the acid blood. And then they just waited around for it to fall off. But this one, I guess, cause it got frozen, it just finished his job fast and fell off. And so then Navarro starts freaking out, and Navarro and Bjorn are freaking out that, Andy's going to try to kill, Navarro. And so they run back to the ship, lock everybody on the space station. The only person who's on the ship is Kay.
Right, because now we're fully in, Alien and or, you know, space movie in general trope of just like, now is time to cut all of our human losses as quickly as possible in the event that anybody is going to survive here.
And this is, we in the audience know exactly what's going to happen, and it happens. Chestburster comes out and she kicks the lever thing and then the ship goes out of control and then it swings by a couple of fuel tanks and smashes into a hangar. Which is, you know, what you do. And that accelerates our timetable, the first of many instances. And the station is not doing so great after that, but the people on the ship are especially not doing any great because one of them's dead. And then the other one got knocked out for some indeterminate period of time. And the guy who had the keys, he fell off a ladder. So he's kind of limp and weird.
Yeah. The middle section of this is a lot of it's the same sort of alien trope stuff, but they're trying to like riff on it a little bit, trying to do slightly more interesting things.
Because we've never seen that cocoon thing, I don't think, before, where it turns into the big adult one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's attempting to explain how it goes from little baby xenomorph to big xenomorph real quick, like.
Because In the first movie, the guy just finds like a snake skin basically on the ground, and then is attacked.
Well, we have one of those too, but then there's also an egg or something. But
right, yeah, and so there's the thing, and he's like, I'm gonna use the electro stabby thing, and he stabs it, and then it sticks a little thing out and slices him, and then a bunch of acid falls on him, and the acid eats his heart out or something, and so he's dead.
Yeah.
She finds the key, opens the door, falls up backwards, ouchie.
Big fall.
Big fall. And this is while Rain, Andy, and Tyler are trying to not be alarmed and walk just with their body temperature through a room that's body temperature-ish, while a bunch of little robot facehuggers chitter around on the boxes. Then they get the dramatic call from Kay, and that accelerates the timetable, and they just run out of there as fast as they can and barely make it through the door. And Rain is a little spooked by all that and says, "Hey, Andy, you almost closed the door." And he's like, "Yeah, but I'm getting better at the timing."
It's got to be slightly creepy. Are you actually trying to kill us, android, for a lot of this movie too? Because that's another very alien thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess through this part, I sort of appreciate that they're like trying new stuff. Like I'm fast forwarding a little bit, but like the zero G shooting the aliens and the blood floating around kind of stuff was. Mm-hmm. Novel, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think there is some creative stuff that they do in this movie that is not just retreading stuff we've seen before, which I appreciate, and it makes them seem like not complete idiots because they are creative enough to come up with these solutions. However, at the same time, there are like I said before, so many red flags that they blow past, and so they get to the airlock. And they can't let Kay in, and because there's the aliens in the background, and so Andy refuses to open the lock, and then she gets taken away, and then they're just freaking out about that for a second, and then he's like, "Okay, well, on to the lab," and so then they go to the Romulus lab, which is the name of the movie, because the station is constructed in two halves, the Remus half and the Romulus half. And for some reason,
that's not the name of the ship, though. It's called the Renaissance or something.
Renaissance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, why didn't you name it Rome? It should have been Rome. Anyway, whatever. So the Renaissance.
You need silly names or whatever. By the way, if we haven't said it yet, the set design in this movie is very good. Like a great many of the Alien movies. There's just something about that like slightly beigey off white that they do for the white lab stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. Obviously it's in contrast to sort of the dark steel, like outer walkway areas, but the labs in the Alien franchise are just, they're so good looking.
Yeah. The production design is absolutely top notch. Amazing. And at first I was like, I'm not sure how I feel about this like CRT thing and trying to make things look like VHS video stuff. But then
VHS,
it was like,
VHS that still works if you put a bullet through it, by the way.
I know. It was just like, that's not how cathode ray, but then it was like, maybe it's not a cathode ray tube. Maybe this is like future projection stuff onto special space glass. I don't know how it works.
This is the year 21 something something in a different far, far away or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. A long time in the future, far, far away. So anyway, the production design is amazing. And I do like also how they make the Remus side look more like aliens. Like everything's kind of like wider octagonal Sid Mead hallways and stuff. And then when they get to the Remus stuff, it's the off-white with the little yellowy LEDs blinking behind the wall, you know, that kind of thing. That's more like Alien. And so I think that is a really effective thing that they do. Having said that, when they get to the lab and Rook appears on the monitor to explain lab stuff, he's like, okay, so yeah, the whole thing here wasn't really about the aliens. It's about extracting this stuff from the aliens, new non-Newtonian fluid.
They don't really say how long they had the alien aboard before it all went to hell. Like, it's been 5 months since it went to hell, but who knows how long they were studying it. But basically, he's like, I noticed this similarity in all of the aliens, and it's this this thing here that we could extract or whatever. It's like, sure.
The similarity in all of the aliens is also because I think he cloned bits of it to make the facehuggers. And then you see like that tank full of facehuggers that have tubes. And for some reason, they're still pumping stuff out of them. And it's just
there's a ton of facehuggers.
Yeah.
There's lots frozen. There's lots in the formerly frozen hallway or whatever that turned into the Geiger tunnel. And then, yeah, there's the more of them in the lab and stuff.
Yeah. And so they're like, oh yeah. And so watch our rat pressing machine. And it totally squished this rat.
Pressing machine.
Yeah. And then we made the rat better and there were no problems. And then at the end of it, I wish they had cut this out of the movie. I did not want them to slowly pan past the exploded rat, like alien monstrosity abomination coming out of the rat pressing cage, and then the video of the rat, you know, spasming and then like exploding into black goo. Like, I feel like we didn't need that, because that just tells us exactly what's going to happen, because we know someone will be injected with this stuff later. And it's very shortly after this that we get teased with that moment. But the just showing us that, like, takes out any kind of like coin toss of what's going to happen. Just, they should have skipped it. Also, how dumb were they that they walked around that whole room and nobody saw the rat pressing machine video looping?
Yeah, they should. I mean, they watched the video of the rat getting squished and then getting revived. Nobody thought to like look over to see where the rat was currently.
Hey, what happened to the rat?
Yeah,
just checking.
But this is one instance of many, which, you know, I know it can be difficult to lose objectivity while you're working on a movie, but the there are a handful of like edits or scenes where they just like they left one too many lines like before they cut away to add a little bit more exposition, just to make sure it really landed. You know, like the close up where she kind of whispers, "Andy, are you in there?" or whatever. Like, I don't need that.
Yeah.
Like, there's that, and then there's the, you know, after they're over the intercom explaining that Andy can't go to the new planet, which is something that they didn't even need to have in this movie. Like, I guess they're trying to give Andy some sort of motivation to potentially be willing to sacrifice himself and do what's necessary at that given moment to motivate him. But like, he's an android; he's going to do whatever. You didn't need that whole little brief subplot aside about him going to be abandoned once they get to the new planet. But then they cut back to her, and they're continuing the exposition of like, you know what did you expect or whatever. I didn't want to explain it to him yet. It's like there's a few more instances there of just like a little bit more exposition than was necessary. And I think, whatever, it's hard to err on the side of like, it's hard to get it exactly right, so they always err on the side of having a little bit too much just in case.
Yeah, the stuff with Rain didn't bother me as much as the rat thing did, because that's like the literal narrative of the movie, as opposed to like, we don't really care about them getting to the colony planet. Like that's not the point of the film, but it sets up some tension between our care. It does divide these characters that seem inseparable in a way. And they're also, you know, divided again by him being able to, now have these abilities, which he covets, but at the same time, it's not actually good for anyone that he has the programming that he has. But, one last thing. When they're in the lab, they have Rook on the intercom thing say, oh, it's Prometheus fired, Wayland died looking for it, and then they do the thing with the, like, reconstruction of the cylinder from Prometheus, and it's like, okay...
Well, yeah, it's
and the music from Prometheus swells, and it's just like a timeout. we get it. Like, calm down.
The genetic structure of the goop is not a double helix. It's shaped like the weird little tube thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so anyway, they're going to take the vials of mysterious black goo that definitely isn't bad, and they're going to go back to the elevator and back to the ship, and then they see the thing on the closed circuit monitor. And so they're just like, okay, well, change of plan. And they break out the two rifles, one for Tyler, one for her. And Tyler explains how it works. And she asks how he knows. And he says magazines and games, which is good. And then they go out through a conveyor belt. And there's just a suspicious number of vacuum-formed facehugger containers that are empty. And so they're just like, well, you know, that probably happened a while ago. And then they get up ahead and the flashlight hits some glistening stuff. And then he turns on all the orange lights and they see all the Geiger tubes. And then it's just like, oh, well, we should probably go a different direction.
Yeah.
And then Tyler here is K.
I mean, were there enough people strung up in the Geiger tube to motivate the number of xenomorphs that you see all over the place? Like once he sticks his head in that like tunnel and there's like 15 of them running at you, it's like, huh, where'd you guys come from?
It is unclear to me the total number of xenomorphs that manifested in this film. And the number of facehuggers. Yeah.
This movie went from Alien, like the original Alien, where you really only need the one to be a big, big problem, to suddenly, you know, we're in Aliens where there's a whole crap load of them and everything is bigger and badder. Like, I don't know. Did they really need that many more of them? I mean, I guess it made the zero G floating acid blood scene more dramatic that there were a bunch of them.
But then they still had more after that, which I was just like,
yeah.
Give them a break, like give us a break, really, because it's just like, how do you expect us to believe there were this many of these, and how do you expect us to believe that they are capable of fighting off or deterring or escaping from all of them when we know that even one of them is so incredibly lethal? But the answer is these aliens always pause for the sake of plot whenever they need to. So they move very fast.
6 inches from your face and they start drooling and making hissing noises.
Yeah, yeah. For a prolonged period of time. But also even
long
when
to
they
be hit with an elevator.
Yeah. What's funny is they get Kay, they get to the elevator. Tyler sacrifices himself for Rain so she doesn't get stabbed, and he goes up and he dies in a dumb way, but then they get on the elevator, Andy's fallen over and he's malfunctioning, but she can't reset him. They go up the elevator and then she's like, I can't abandon Andy, and so she gives Kay the black oh, we didn't mention when they're trying to figure out how to get Kay up and running because she's losing a lot of blood, they're like, maybe we just give her the black goo that we literally just saw the rat thing, and they're like, no, we can't just inject her with that, we don't know what
like
it'll do.
His cell is so weak too. He's like, what do you say, rats and humans share 25% of their DNA and it worked on the rat. It's like 25% mm-hmm. is not a lot of percent.
No, 25% of the time it doesn't work every time. So they do that little exchange, but then they decide not to do that. But then they get on the elevator and Kay immediately is like, well, I need to feel better. And so she injects herself with it. And I guess it's better that she has the agency to inject herself with it rather than someone else doing it to her. But at the same time, nobody really like gave her the full like drug interaction warning label thing for this. She didn't have a consultation with the pharmacist.
She missed the part where the other people who knew what the stuff was said, I don't trust this. And she's like, I don't know what it is at all, but I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
I guess maybe
I feel
that's
like
the desperation of you, like you're on the verge of feeling like you're going to die. So
mm-hmm.
is that
well, it certainly didn't help. Yeah. So she takes the elevator up, she gets on the ship, and then Rook appears on the monitor. It's like, oh, just go ahead and push the button and escape. They gave their lives, it'll be fine. And she's like, I don't know you, I don't trust you, I'm just gonna like pass out in this chair. And then back down there, she climbed down, opened the thing, all of the aliens are gone, conveniently, and then she goes over to Andy and she tries to reset him, and he doesn't want her to take the disc thingy out, and she's like, just let me do this, put you back to normal, I need you back, otherwise you'll die and that wouldn't be good for the company. And so that convinces his programming to let her do it, and then she resets him.
Yeah, you dying wouldn't be good for the company is such a fun line.
Yeah. And so they get up and they hear all the aliens and they start backing out the hallway and they hold up the guns, and then the aliens kind of back off a little bit, and then they get all the way back. Rook won't let them in. They have no other choice. They sit there and tell each other bad jokes while the aliens are just hanging out 200 feet away, hissing. Then she gets the idea to turn off the gravity generator. They do that. We get the cool zero G acid blood stuff. And she's using the rifle, which auto targets their heads conveniently. And that works real well. And then they kind of like make their way through the spinning acid stuff. It's pretty tense for the actors having nothing to act off of and being mm-hmm. on wires. And so they get back to the elevator. Also, I never understood why they had the like blue glowy field thing like they have in the original alien movie on the alien ship, on like an engineer ship
kind of thing, just because it looked cool.
Yeah, I was just like, but did the aliens don't make that field, do they? Like, are we saying that, or are we saying that the scientists put the field there in the hallway for no reason? I don't understand.
I don't know.
But
it is cool.
Whatever. They get on the elevator and they're like, oh, the elevator won't work in zero G, but they pushed the button. So the thing's like unspooling like crazy. And then they start climbing up the ladder, they push off, really. They should have climbed up the ladder because they forgot about the gravity purge, and the gravity purge happens. And
they had too much fizzy lifting drink.
Yeah. And then the elevator goes smashing around, kills some of them, but not the one that was threatening her. Moments earlier, it tucked around a corner. And one of the things I don't like that they did in this movie is that this alien that is after her now in the elevator, that is taking its sweet time, has a wound in its head that is constantly sparking with electricity. And I think they're trying to get us to think that this is the alien that was inside Navarro that killed Bjorn on the ship earlier, that Bjorn had stabbed with the electric staff thing, because I don't know why else it would be sparking in the top temple-ish area of its head, unless it was supposed to be the remnant of that.
I apparently missed that entirely.
Yeah, well, I saw it the first time, and then when I rewatched it earlier, I was just like, yeah, they're definitely making his head spark for no reason. It's not like he holds an electric charge. I don't know, maybe the acid. Maybe there's some lead-acid interaction happening there.
Just wants you to know that this alien's mad and is holding a grudge because it got electrocuted.
Which is why it's going to take 3,000 years to kill her. But that's fine, because then... Andy saves the day, even though he doesn't have the advanced programming. And then the worst part of the movie happens. He says, get away from her, you, and then stutters B word. And it's just like,
that was the worst part for you.
Cause that's a line that is pandering to the audience completely and totally. I could, I guess, forgive the Rook one because it's just like, oh, well, it's an android. It's going to repeat things, whatever. But he didn't see aliens, which hasn't happened yet. So I don't understand why he would say those things in that order. But it just really kind of took me out of respecting that moment. And whatever. But it bugged me. And then they get back up to the ship. Kay hasn't left. They push the remote thing. They take off. They turn off the remote thing because they're like, we're not going to the planet. Like, you're crazy. We're going to go to the sun colony where everything's fine. And Andy's just like, well, what about me? They don't let synthetics. And she's like, we'll figure it out. Whatever. And so she plugs him into the wall, and Rook is cursing as the space station is being destroyed. And it's cool, actually, because it's like being sheared apart by the density of the ring of crap around this planet.
Mm-hmm. Which also aids in making it take a really long time.
Yeah. But one of the things I did like, though, is whenever they showed us those wide shots of the station's shadow on the white ring, it was very stark. I liked all those outer space shots. They look cool. They take forever killing Rook. And then they start settling in. She plugs Andy into the wall to, you know, conveniently get him out of the narrative for a second. And then she goes downstairs and checks on Kay's pod thing, and it freaks out and says vitals, blah, 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 and ejects her. And then she is way more pregnant than she should be, and things are moving, and something comes out, and it is an egg pod thing. And this is bad.
This is one of the instances in this movie that was, I don't know, maybe this is just 2024 alien movies, but it was a bit more gratuitous than I felt was warranted.
It was so gratuitous, it very unwarranted, and they also ended up killing Kay, which also felt extremely unwarranted because the baby ate her. But before all that happens, she tries to take the pod, it burns her hands, so she grabs the like a sheet or whatever, or shirt, and puts it around it, and then tries carrying it, and then it burns through that, and then burns through the floor into the cargo bay area. And pay attention to this part later, because that doesn't make any sense, because they've compromised the integrity of the hull of the actual ship, not just the cargo pod, by burning the hole there. But whatever, she goes down into the cargo pod, and she's got the cryoblaster thing to try to like freeze it. But she only finds the empty pod full of acid. Not important. And then there's something looming behind her. But Andy comes to senses and goes downstairs and is like, what's going on? And Kay is crawling around on the ground, covered in blood from all the very bad things that have happened. And then the, I think they refer to it as the offspring on the Wikipedia page, which is gross. Yeah. And then it slashes Andy's throat, and it is all like, they kind of, they on purpose made the face look like an engineer-ish kind of.
it's a weird unholy mix of Prometheus and Alien Resurrection.
Yeah, well, and see, this is the funny part. In that Variety interview where he talked about that stuff, he said that his son said that it was a reference to Alien Resurrection after you watched the premiere, and that he's like, oh, I didn't even think about that. And he's just like, how did you not think? No one on the movie thought about that? Anyone?
Yeah, it's pretty clearly.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, they have the human xenomorph hybrid offspring, which has never been done before, except that other time. But then the offspring eats her. But not before she finds out that she has mucus coming out of her. Ugh, it's just too much. Like, poor Kay. She really did not deserve that. She was a very loyal person. And but she should not have injected herself with mystery science goo. And then brain comes back up and tries to get it, and then is just like, uh-oh, is too big. And then goes and puts on a space suit, and then is like, I'll lure it into the pod and eject the pod. And that goes on for a lot longer than it really should, because there's like, I don't want to say 16 minutes of this, with the offspring. And you know, there's only so much Pretty Fly for a White Guy I can take.
I don't know. It's dramatic, I guess. I probably leaned a little heavily on the music and the overall vibe of what we've all been through here, but it's not exactly like the most suspenseful portion of the movie we've seen so far, because the offspring, while being creepy and lurking around and crawling on the roof and stuff, is not really the most threatening of the things that we've seen thus far.
No, and also, it is also something that we've kind of been through before many times in this scenario of you're on the escape ship and you think you're safe, but you're not really safe, which is not new in this franchise. It happened the original movie.
Of course, that's one of the many that's one of the many things in this movie that they're just like, we're doing the alien thing, paint by numbers or whatever.
Yeah, well, because it happens in Alien, it happens in Aliens when the queen stowed away on the ship, it happens in Alien Resurrection when the baby stows away on the ship, and it happens, what else
was that, a separate ship, or was that just the cargo bay when they were getting ready to get on the ship? It was basically the same thing anyway.
Yeah, no, that was the Betsy or whatever it was, the pirate cruise ship
where they put the hole in the window. Yeah, and it went out. Yeah. Gotcha.
With little chunks. Watched that ending today too, just because, to be like, how close is it? And I was like, that was pretty close. So anyway, they killed that. And they killed this offspring by flushing it out into space by ejecting the pod, but the pod has a hole because she put the acid there, and she goes through the hole, and then it's holding onto her, but it's disintegrating because it's, I guess it can't make a cocoon. Oopsie. And so then she gets towed back onto the ship, and then I guess she patches the hole in the floor, and then she gets ready for bed.
Wasn't the hole just in the cargo thing that they dropped?
Well, remember, there was a hole in the hallway to the cargo pod.
Hmm.
And then she made another hole once she was in the cargo pod.
Okay.
But when she goes back up into the ship, she goes through the cargo hold door, but there's still that hole in the hallway that's before you get to the door.
Okay.
That she would have had to patch. Anyway, it's not important. It's just one of those things where I'm just like, so in the edit, in between these shots, she patched the floor, like welded it. I don't know. Maybe she took a little course on spot welding ships.
Well, she's a factory, not factory, whatever.
Miner.
Yeah, I'm sure they do some similar things.
Yeah, she's pretty young. Anyway, you missed my joke.
She's 26 or something. She definitely looks very young in this movie.
Very, very young, much younger than that. But she plugs up stuff and Andy puts him into a cryopod. She gets into a cryopod. And she has her little log recording that she does. about how she's the last survivor. I guess she's not counting Andy. And then they just are going to that colony no matter what. And they don't make it clear what she did with the vials of evil goo that do bad things. So I don't know if they're going to be like, so funny story, in the next movie, they are saved by some people, but they have vials of black goo, and then bad stuff happens with the black goo. But like, I wish they'd think that she would just flush it out into space at this point. But they, whatever, they go on their merry way, and that's the end of the movie.
I really expected them to, I don't know, maybe it's just the sequelitis of it all, but like, I really expected like that to come back around, or there to be yet another thing hiding somewhere or something. They just like let her go to sleep and leave a voicemail.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this thing had a lot of endings, so it's fine that they ended there. It does leave things open in the future, but at the same time, it's just like, I don't know what they're going to do next time. And apparently Fede Alvarez has said, you know, I want some time to digest what I would like to do between this and the next movie. It's not going to be like in 2 years, we're going to have another movie, which is fine by me, because I don't feel like rushing these things helps. But at the same time, taking a long time also has not helped, because you can do weird stuff. And one of the things about this movie is that it's very constrained by the sort of mechanics and laws that have been set in place, because it needs to occupy this space and time and use these creatures. And so that's why when they can break out of it and do something with the offspring, it's like, oh, well, now we can change rules. And that's the same thing that they've done in all of the other Alien movies, when they've been like, oh, well, we can change the rules now that we did this thing, now that it's, you know, part dog, it can run on walls or whatever in Alien 3. Now that we've, you know, resurrected Sigourney Weaver, it can be part human and have a womb and stuff and be a really bad choice. And then we can do, you know, all those other things of like Prometheus and like Alien Covenant splicing together, whatever.
I mean, I think it made the black goo doing like producing an alien resurrection hybrid thing in this movie made more sense than the weird different combo creatures that came out of Prometheus. Like if who and mm-hmm. what drinks the black goo, what is it gonna look? This one's an octopus. Like I still don't understand any of that stuff.
Yeah, remember that purple starfish thing? That was a lot of like Ridley Scott being like, I've got way better ideas. And like, people are bored with aliens, I'm gonna like really blow the top off of this with like how this is all like primordial building blocks. And it's like nobody wanted to see that. And so then the next one, they had to call it Alien Covenant and then have an alien in it, because otherwise Ridley wasn't getting a check. And so they did that. And then Ridley's like, I don't know, I could do another one. I think there's an idea for another one. And then no one wanted to see it. And so he's a producer on this. And Fede Alvarez is very, I don't know, wrapped up in the early stuff, but also yeah. wanting to tie it together with Prometheus in a way that links them, and in kind of like the same way that people do that with the Star Wars stuff, where they're like, we're going to keep going, but we're going to make the prequel make sense this time. And it's like, I don't know. But I mean, you can, success can vary with that kind of thing.
I mean, it's an entertaining movie that fits in the chronology of things, but really, mm-hmm. I mean, just on the whole, I think the vibe I got from it is that it's just like, it's Alien 1 again, but for 2024, just like we're starting over kind of, here's where we're at with stuff. And like, I don't know, maybe they'll just do a movie in between all of the other movies and just do another run starting from the beginning again or something.
Well, or they'll have, maybe the next one will be Fede Alvarez has David, and he comes across Rain in her ship, and we find out what happened with him and what he's been up to, and the fact that she's got this black goo stuff, and then even worse things can happen. I don't know. I could
they
never
even show where she put the black goo.
No, because they had Kay bring it on the ship, because that was the way that Rook would autopilot the ship and open the hangar doors, is if it was on the ship, because he's fun like that. But
Rain have like thrown it out the airlock? That would have been a useful thing to add in here.
That's what I was asking you earlier, is like, I feel like they just didn't show us what she did with it because they want to leave their options open. is like, I would have thrown it out the airlock. It's no good can come from this stuff.
Yeah.
Get rid of it.
I feel like she would have done that too. I mean, that's a very, and again, not trying to do direct parallels to Ripley or whatever, but like, that's a very, like, I just barely survived this whole messy incident and I can finally mm-hmm. take a breath. Like, we're going to mourn the loss of all of our friends and we're going to move on. But like, let's throw all of that stuff in the garbage can and move on. Like that's mm-hmm. the kind of thing that bookends these kinds of movies usually.
Yeah. And I feel like I said, I feel like they just didn't do it cause they want to leave their options open. And so I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this. I for whatever my number rating system on Letterboxd is worth, I gave it a 3.5. Cause I feel as a movie, it functions as something that is maintaining these IP things. It works. It's got thrills. People aren't total dummies. Some of the time they come up with creative stuff we haven't seen before. So it can make things stay interesting instead of feeling like a complete rehash, even though they rehash a ton of stuff. It's not bad. And I feel like it was definitely worth talking about, which is why I suggested we do it. But I don't know. What is your opinion of this? Especially in how it stands up to everything else.
It's good. I don't know. I mean, it's good that it's here and it exists or whatever. Like it's not doing damage to the franchise or something. And I don't even want to be cynical and say like, do we need this movie? Because like I'm a modern, like, you know, reinvigoration of the franchise is fine. Like it's okay to, you know, do another one or whatever. I don't know. I don't think we're gonna love anyone from this movie the way we liked Ripley, and it's not gonna inspire people quite that way. It's kind of like by nature of all of the things that it is and the things that it does, it's kind of partway in between all of the different movies and by extension a lot of the different styles. So it's not quite as long and lingering and just really atmospheric as the original Alien. And then you're adding some of the more intricate stuff from the other movies down the line, the more modern stuff, that it's doing a lot that it doesn't really like lean into style too much in certain places. So I don't know. I don't know what I meant to take away from it other than like, oh, that was a pretty serviceable Alien movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it functions. And I think for me also, I don't know how to say this. I didn't like Prometheus and did not really like Alien Covenant. The only things that really make me like those movies at all are David. And in the second one, David and Walter. I feel like everything about those is just kind of like Ridley trying to just do something he feels is more interesting than trying to do what this movie does, which is let's just have people in alien costumes that look like the original movie doing stuff on sets that look almost like the original Alien movie. Ridley was obviously not going for that when he was doing his prequels. I just don't care for what he did in his prequels. So they suck. It's not to say that every idea is bad. It's just like, in totality, they're not good. But you know, does this give us somewhere else to go? Is there anything more interesting we could do in this universe other than rehash and retread this stuff again? I couldn't say. I mean, the whole thing is propped up by the same stuff that it always is: the greed of the corporation, hubris of humanity, the synthetics that we have created and what guides them in their own little weird personalities and quirks.
Do you think they've learned the lesson that if you try to stray too far from the original formula that worked, it's going to be less successful? Because, like, you know, there's got to be somebody out there that goes like, let's try something way off in a different direction. And like, let's show the company side of things. And like, let's get, you know, a different perspective on this universe. Whereas this one is very much steering into like, let's just do what the first one did. And that, and find all the reasons it was successful before.
I feel like this movie isn't trying to do what the first one did so much as it's trying to do what the first and second one did. And I think that may be part of the problem. And like, because the whole thing of them going through the Geiger tube stuff and fighting aliens and shooting things and stuff, that's all aliens.
Yeah, but like the whole like militarization and like we're gonna go in there and kick everything's ass, and then they realize that they are hopelessly outmatched thing, like that's not here. Like, we've just got a bunch of dumb kids who are gonna die.
Right. Yeah. Well, that hubris is from Rook in this, of like, oh yeah, everything's fine, I made the black goo, it's all good, just do that and everything will be fine, everything's good. And it's like, things are not fine, things are not good. Things are in fact quite terrible. I feel like there's that, but it's just like, how can you do that again? Of like, the company wants this to happen, and these people are crushed by the company into doing this thing that they don't want to do, and it turns out the company thing backfired. And it's like, how many times can you do that part? That's the thing that I'm really curious about, because it's just like, you can't do this movie again. That wouldn't work. And where do you go from that? And then today I sent you that thing that I saw in the news about how Dan Trachtenberg is apparently making two Predator movies in 2025.
Yeah. There's apparently a lot more to extract out of that franchise somehow.
If I were to hold up the two franchises, and I will, because they've been connected and compared so many times, I would say that Alien is probably in better shape than Predator at this point. Having said that, it's been a long time since we've had an unequivocal, like, good one. That's for sure. And I was thinking about this, you know, like how everybody like ranks things, like S tier and all that crap. All the tier rankings. If you put them in a list and you're like, this is the best one and this is the worst one, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, I don't think that works, but I was just like, if you just say like quality wise, where do these go? I would say the first one and the second one, Alien and Aliens, those are S tier. And then most of these are crap. And I would like put them very far down at the bottom. Alien 3, total crap, F. And then Alien Resurrection, D. And it's like Prometheus, F, Alien Covenant.
Well, Prometheus is pretty, but it's nonsense, and it sets up some interesting conceptual ideas. So maybe I would give Prometheus a D, almost leaning into a C, but not quite a C.
And Alien Covenant, you would give a D too.
Covenant is a movie that I forget exists, generally speaking, until somebody goes like, remember that cool scene where Fassbender talks to another Fassbender and how well it's done. I barely remember. So the plot of Covenant is what, like he takes the alien spaceship and he goes back to the engineer planet because he gets the coordinates or whatever, and then he says, screw you engineers, I'm gonna kill you all, and he throws black goo on them and they all die.
Yes.
And then he makes xenomorphs out of something in black goo.
Well, what's her face? Noomi Rapace's character. She's vivisected on a table, and she like uses her tissues and whatever to like engineer the things that he's making. And so he makes those little stabby guys that go out of the guy that they inhale with the spores, and then they turn into like little knife xenomorphs that like stab their way out of the guy's chest from the back. Instead of, you know, chest bursters, you can just do something original.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. And then they have the what's his face go lean his face over the egg, because he's getting closer to making the xenomorphs, and then one of them pops out of there, and then David and Walter fight, and then they think that they have David on the platform thing that they're hauling back up, and the alien's there, and they kill the alien, and then they get back onto the thing, and then he puts everybody to sleep, and then the captain, or the new captain, I guess, realizes just as she's going under into the sleep chamber that it's David, not Walter, who is on the ship. And then...
Yeah, right. It's bad David, and he's got a bunch of face huggers in the little tray.
Yeah, he coughs him up because he like kept him in his stomach or whatever. And so That's how that ends.
That's why you gotta have metal detectors on your ship, man. Or, you know, organic detectors inside of androids or whatever.
Well, remember, you have all of these tools for scanning through things. Never use them on a person in this franchise. Ever. Ever, ever, ever.
Like, it's just a lot of stupidity stuff. Like, you would think, like, yeah. Oh, there's a lot of weird stuff floating around out there, and especially in Prometheus, where they're like, is there some sort of like weird disease that's infecting people or something? Where Charlize is going to like burn what's his name in the cargo bay or something. You'd think there'd be some sort of like health and safety protocols to say like, hey, let's check you out before you come in here.
Yeah. Well, remember, he was infected on purpose by David. He put a drop of the goo in his glass.
Right. But rather than addressing it in any sort of scientific fashion, they're just like, you're going to stay outside until my intuition tells me you're either good or bad, and then I'm going to burn you if you try to come in here.
Right. And then the real bad one showed up, and they tried to burn him, and that did not go to plan. But, so anyway, this movie, it's not an A, and it's not, I don't feel like it's a D, no. So I don't know if I feel like I would give it a B or a C. I think maybe B.
B-.
That's not how it works. But I guess for the purposes of this, we could say, I mean, I guess C. Maybe we're just liking it because we just saw it recently and we'll forget about it in two months.
Wait, so are we doing tiers like all the weirdos? Is it go S, A, B, C, D, F?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Then this is a B. As long as there's a little bit of separation between this and the good ones.
Oh, yeah. See, it goes S with Alien and Aliens. Nothing in A.
Yeah.
This is B. And then we've got C with nothing in it. And then we've got D with Prometheus and maybe Covenant. And then we've got F with Alien 3. I guess Resurrection goes in D too.
Resurrection gets a D?
I think so. Because it's got Sigourney. It's got Winona.
It's got Winona. There's a basketball scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Written by Joss Whedon before he was terrible, I guess.
You know, I don't want to rain on your parade, but I think the D comes from nostalgia. I think that movie is an F. Have we revisited that movie? We've not, have we?
I mean, we watched it. We've done all of the Alien movies.
We watched it for this podcast, huh?
We did watch it for this podcast.
I don't remember that at all.
Did we not watch it for this podcast?
I don't know. Maybe we did. I don't have any
weird
things. Let me look. I mean, you'll probably find it faster than I will, but like,
Alien Resurrection, October 8th, 2018, the Space Jam cinematic universe. Cause remember the basketball.
Yeah. Look
when you see the Abomination room, go two more doors and hang a left. Remember, cause all the kill me, that stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember that movie being, useful in any way.
No. Okay. So fine. We'll put an F.
Okay. There. We finally done it. We solved the franchise. There's room for an A. I think there's room for.
There's lots of room.
I don't know if they could ever get away with it, but I think that there's room for a movie that doesn't try to do so much. Not that this movie is doing a ton, but like it's doing a lot, especially if you know like where it's pulling the references and like why it's doing the stuff. Maybe if you watch this movie without seeing the other movies or like being as aware of all of the other movies, it would seem more straightforward. But there's so much in here where you're just like, I know what that is, and now I got to compartmentalize it over here, and then we can move on to the next thing. And all right, let's keep going or whatever. But like,
yeah,
maybe there's a way to, I don't know, and not to go back to like Blade Runner 2049, but like that's another movie that makes reference to a world that is pre-existing, but it seems to do enough unique stuff that it was interesting on its own and enjoyable.
Yeah, except for what's his face? Why am I blanking on his name? Terrible person. Was the Joker, but not the current Joker. The old Joker.
Jared Leto. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's so bad. He like really tanked it for me. I loved his number one lieutenant lady. She was great.
Yeah, I mean the character Jared Leto was playing and particularly the sets that he was, well, not real sets, but like obviously the environments he was in were great and added to the world and was very nice. But whatever that he was doing was
the acting affectation was so bad. Really question that. But anyway, we're not going to talk about all the Ridley Scott films because that doesn't make any sense. But maybe we'll throw in Alien versus Predator and Predator movies next time and rank those. No, that won't be any fun.
I thought we did some of those.
Yeah. Oh, well, we've done all of those too.
Yeah. I was going to say, we've done at least two of them.
I just meant in terms of
ranking system.
Yeah.
They go in F. There's no question. They just go in F. Well, if there's something lower than F, they go there.
We need to invent lower tiers, is what I'm learning. It would be
corporate greed or whatever, or
incomplete.
Withdrawal.
It is very funny to me though, still, that Paul W.S. Anderson's idea of like, oh, all of this stuff on star maps from these ancient civilizations, it's all related to aliens that have come here before, and it's the Predators. And then Ridley Scott does, all these ancient star maps are how we find this planet that we're going to go to and meet our forebears, the engineers. And so they do that too. So it's funny to me. And then they both have Weyland in them, although one of them is Lance Henriksen and the other one is Guy Pearson. Too much old person makeup, trying to act old, and it's very bad. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
What a strange choice. So you could have a young Guy Pearce do a TED talk and a promo thing. It was just like, why are we doing this? Just cast an old person.
I like the mystery around the company and not really knowing what it's doing and, you know, the scope of its bad deeds or whatever. But I feel like at this point in the franchise, it is kind of just like shorthand for bad guys that I think could be fleshed out a little bit more. I don't know. I don't know if it's just in another like Paul Reiser character that's going to come in and like really take the reins and do bad guy stuff. But like, I feel like it's underutilized.
Yeah. I was going to say my favorite villain of this whole thing is Paul Reiser's character of Burke, because he's so terrible. He is going to put facehuggers in a room with Sigourney and a little girl so that he can smuggle the aliens back through quarantine. And it's just like, he's such a good villain in that way, because he's also human. He's not programmed to be evil like Ash is.
It's another way to unsettle you and go like, oh, this is a world and a universe where maybe things are a little different, or like, this isn't the humanity that I know and understand now, because, you know, there's space travel and things have happened and we've discovered new and interesting ways to be terrible and greedy.
Well, I mean, I feel like we have all those same ways of being terrible and greedy. We just can't do it in space yet.
I mean, the sacrificing women and children for corporate gains in such a just blatant way is probably not something you see a ton of around here.
I feel like we do some pretty terrible things on Earth. But you know, maybe one of these days Elon Musk can make us do terrible things on Mars and have indentured servants that work the mines there. That'll be great.
I hope he accidentally rapidly decompresses.
He's going to go off and find our forebearers and try to get immortal life from them so that he can live forever. And then they'll crush his head, which will be great, but I won't live to see it. On that note, we should wrap this one up and eject our offspring into space.
Mine's sleeping.
Then just leave it. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Watch out for the acid.
Yeah. Well, just his attitude is acidic. Anyway, movie's over. Bye-bye.
Movie's over. Yay.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.